I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I love this guy here. When I went to that Sturgill Simpson show the other night, Johnny Holzman and I remembered that we had gone to this guy. J.D. McPherson is his name. And he's great. Fred, we've had J.D. on the air. He is. He was an Oklahoma high school teacher. And he came into music later in life and did this song. Became a hit, I don't know, 12 years ago or something like that. So I wanted to put a little J.D. McPherson in here as our bumper music. You can always find the list of bumper music if you follow me on Twitter. You can go to @MarkReardonKFTK. I mentioned that the trip to Greece is now highlighted at the top of that page. If you go to my page, just look at the pinned tweet. Couple things that I haven't mentioned. I think I want to talk about this, Fred, on the roundtable tomorrow. So you're going to love this one. Okay, so remember the story from a few weeks ago with St. Louis County Councilman Dennis Hancock, who's my councilman. And all of a sudden, some weird stuff happened after the primary where Wesley Bell, who is going to be your next member of Congress, replacing Cori Bush, he's the St. Louis County prosecutor currently, they pulled these shenanigans where they said, look, we're going to cite something in the Constitution that says that you can't hire family members. And he was trying to hire his daughter-in-law. So they actually tried to kick him off the council. Well, a judge would have none of that. They put him back on the council. I don't know exactly what the status of that is. Today
they had a consensus of the council hearing, which means they're trying to figure out, should they proceed with this?
With that very issue.
Right. Who will pay
for the legal bills?
Dennis Hancock's legal bills. Should the council pay for it, or is this a private thing? Should he have to pay for his own?
Here's the thing. I hate to say this, but I think the council should pay for it because the way that they did this thing was ridiculous. And let me highlight this a little bit more and put this in more proper context, because that was a big scandal. Remember, Sam Page didn't like it. Wesley Bell didn't like it. They wanted him out. They tried to literally kick the guy after he was just elected last year, maybe 2 years ago, off the county council. So then Joe Holloman at the Post, one of the few guys that actually does stories like this, does this story. With the imminent hiring of Danielle Spradley, most recently the community outreach advisor to U.S. Representative Cori Bush, Sam Page, St. Louis County executive, has for the second time in 3 weeks picked up the paycheck of an outgoing high-ranking aide. So potentially hiring his daughter-in-law, that gets you kicked off of the St. Louis County Council, according to Sam Page and Wesley Bell. But hiring Danielle Spradley at $89,000 a year, $85,000 a year. She's going to be classified as a community outreach liaison. She worked for Cori Bush from 2017 to 20, then worked on the campaign. Also works for Bruce Franks, who's going to prison now at this point. You know, he faces, I don't know if people, I didn't talk about that. Do you know about Bruce Franks, Fred?
Yeah.
We used to have Bruce on the show every once in a while. You know, he came from a very different background. He was a state representative. Then he left for Arizona. He's been charged with 10 felony charges for forgery and theft, and he's probably going to spend a bunch of time in prison. But this is a pretty sweet gig if you can get it. You know, you go from one public official who's just awful to another public official, and you get paid anywhere from, you know, $80,000 to $100,000 a year. I give Joe credit for highlighting this, but how is this not something that's going to mean, you know, more questions? Here's the other hiring. Page's office also, on September 30th, plucked up Tim Swope. Tim Swope, the chief of operations for St. Louis prosecuting attorney Wesley Bell. Well, Wesley Bell's leaving, right? Wesley Bell's going to Congress, so this poor guy needs another job. He can make a lot of money sucking off the taxpayers. So he is going to work as a special projects coordinator and make $120,000 a year. Now, they describe him as, you know, a former St. Louis County police chief in North County and a Republican St. Charles County sheriff. I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. Wouldn't it be a little wise to take a look at some of these positions? What special projects coordinator?
Do they just make stuff up?
Yes, they do make stuff up.
It sounds like some of the positions in the Chicago mayor's office.
Well, Fred, I don't have time for that, but we're going to get to that probably later this hour. But how now, maybe some of these positions, there's ROI. I mean, I don't suck off the taxpayers, so I don't know. But 120 grand to do what? Special projects. What are you doing? Couldn't find someone to do that for 65 or 70, right? You got to hire this guy from Wesley Bell's office because he's unemployed because Wesley's going to Congress, and I guess he doesn't want to spend time in D.C. I don't know. Why didn't Wesley hire him? Then there's this. That's county government. This is good, too. In the city of St. Louis, they bought some EVs. So have you seen this story?
The city has bought
the
them?
The city has purchased some EVs what because for? They care about the planet. They really... And they cost... You want to take a stab at what they cost?
Well, wait a minute. What are they for? Well, are they just cars?
They're for public officials that deserve to have cars because they suck off the taxpayers, right? So, yeah, they need, you know, there's people that need cars here, and they have to be EVs because otherwise we're destroying the planet. So what we're going to do is spend $46,200 on Ford Mustang Mach-Es.
Oh, come on.
Fancy sporty EVs. Because they couldn't. So this is what I love about government. You know what the reasoning is here?
What?
Well, they were looking for other vehicles. And they were going to get the Ford F-150 pickup trucks, which, by the way, they're probably more expensive.
That's probably more.
And the Chevy Tahoes driven by police patrol. Those are more expensive. But, you know, this was a better deal than that. How come?
Isn't
there a more moderately? Yeah. You know what's insanity? Any of these people having cars that are paid for by us anyway.
Yes.
Get your own damn cars. Everyone else does.
They need to work with MasterCards. They can find cars.
Thank you, Fred.
That is unbelievable.
I always love it when you cross-pollinate on the sponsors. That's a very good thing. Let's do this afternoon.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
On this day in history, 122 years ago, that's in 1902, the first Cadillac was completed in Detroit. So happy birthday to Cadillac, 122 years old. Didn't you have a Caddy at one point, Mark?
I did. I had a Cadillac ATS because I thought it was pretty cool. They came out with that car, I don't know, 10 years ago. It didn't last very long, but it was a little bit more sporty. You know, Cadillac was always the old people's car, right?
It was,
right,
but it was
now I qualify.
Then we all get older,
right.
Yes, exactly.
So it was a fun little car for a while.
A little bit of music here because on this day in history, 54 years ago in 1970, this song hit number one on the pop singles chart and stayed there for 5 weeks. Can you tell?
Hear Michael
of course you
here,
can.
Right? Jackson 5.
You and I must make a pact.
And who was it that just died? Was it Tito?
No. Was it Tito? No, I thought it was the other one. Come on.
But he told... Remember we shared some of that great audio from when this was all happening with Michael and how it all came together with the Jackson 5.
Tito. I'm embarrassed that I don't remember who it was. But this was the hit song. This was number one on the pop singles chart 54 years ago. It stayed there for 5 weeks. And I'll tell you what, if you go onto YouTube and watch some old Michael Jackson, well, the Jackson videos, it's incredible because he could still move back. I mean, that was the beginning of him dancing, and it's nuts. They were on the Cher show a lot, and you watch some of the outfits those people put on and dance to it. It's just wow.
So this morning when I was in my house along these lines, and by the way, it was Tito that passed away at the age of 70.
Thank you for looking that up.
I was in my house this morning, and I've told you that I have, you know, deep love for John Mayer, and John Mayer has a SiriusXM station. And I'm listening, he plays Jackson 5, and he played I Want You Back this morning, and I cannot never not listen to that song and be blown away by what Michael does in that song. And this is another example of that.
Yes.
And he was, what, he's 10 years
old? A kid.
If not, maybe not even that old.
I know. It really is
unbelievable. Who could have predicted that would have been a mega superstar, you know, and one of the biggest selling artists of all times?
Well, okay, this is 54 years ago. Let me take you to 37 years ago today and what was number one on the pop singles chart. This is 1987.
Well,
can you tell?
This song.
Can you tell, Fred?
Do you know it yet, Fred? I don't think I would have known it from the intro, but I can cheat because I see the title.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Hit the beat now.
There you go.
It's Lisa and Cult Jam, one of the best ridiculous names ever. Lisa and Cult Jam.
Was this a number one, did you say?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
this was number one in 1987. On this day in history.
You know, let's talk about that When in Rome song that Sturgill Simpson covers. That was 1987, too. So, yeah, it was a very poppy year.
It was a very poppy year. It was kind of a poppy decade.
Kind of was, Sue, when you think about the 80s.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, the Federal Trade Commission, Fred found this story, has released a final version of its click-to-cancel rule requiring companies to make at least make it at least as easy to cancel memberships and subscriptions as it is to sign up. Now, the rule bars businesses from making people, quote, jump through endless hoops to cancel recurring payments. Yes, yes, yes.
I'm so glad you brought this up because this was on my list yesterday, and candidly, it should have been on my list today, but this is so important because
it
has become sometimes, and I've had this challenge, you know, with things that you sign up for. Sometimes you sign up for a temporary, you know, subscription or whatever just to try it out, and they make it very difficult.
They really do.
To cancel.
Yeah, they do. Now, this requires retailers, gyms, any other businesses to get a consumer's consent for memberships, subscriptions, auto renewals, free trials that convert to paid memberships. And the FTC says a number of complaints it gets about these recurring things has been steadily increasing for the last 5 years. It has to be even more than that. It's been going on forever.
I hate to have government be the solution here, but the companies don't want to be the solution.
No, they don't.
I like that they're going to stop that passive way of getting you to sign up. Like if you don't do something by a certain time,
right,
it clicks in.
Yes. Oh,
I'm curious what it'll look like though. Like where on, and now it's going to look different for different companies on different websites, but is it going to be like front page, cancel here? Like what is it going to look like as far as like the ability to,
I think it's just
going to
be a little bit more obvious because you really have to search around. They want you to have to do that because then, I mean, think about it. And this would be, I don't think this is a good thing. I'm not proud of this, but I will tell you that I have a lot of little subscriptions, and some of them are like for $2.99, Bernie Goldberg's newsletter, Fred.
Right.
I subscribe to some of these little things on Substack, and you know, then you forget about them, right?
Yeah.
And then sometimes you're like, ah, that's only $2.99. But you start adding $2.99 and $5.99 and $8.99 and $10, it adds up.
It totally adds up. It adds up super, super quickly. All right, we've got the Hunter's Moon, the first full moon of fall. It's tonight. So if you look in the eastern sky around sunset, you can see the Hunter's Moon. And as a bonus, this month's full moon is also a super moon. So it's going to be really cool to see.
Last night was very cool to see.
Yeah, last night was nice.
Really, really bright.
Okay, and well, it's supposed to be even brighter tonight. The Old Farmer's Almanac advises to wait until sunset to watch it rise, and then it'll take its place in the sky. It's going to be really cool. The Hunter's Moon is the first full moon following the harvest moon.
When I came off of, I take 44 to 141, and then I kind of loop around onto 141. When I did that, so I'm heading west, right, toward Eureka, if you will. And when I looped around on that interchange last night and just looked off to my left, which is east, huge
so
moon.
Pretty.
Now, it wasn't even quite dark yet, but it was beautiful.
Oh,
when
I love
is
it.
Sunset these days? Is it around 640? Something
Somebody
like
look
that?
At their phone
it's,
and tell
it
me.
Is
it's
there,
in the
Fred.
Sixes. And Steve Moore, our boss, wanted me to mention this one. The St. Louis Walk to End Alzheimer's is Saturday, October 26th at Chesterfield Amphitheater. And this is one of the top 10 walks in the country. And last year, we had about 2,500 people participate. They raised over $1 million. So if you want to participate, make sure that you go and register for the St. Louis Walk to End Alzheimer's.
We're way off on sunset, by the way.
What time
because
is it?
Because it's dark by like that, but it's 6:19.
6:19.
Wow. And so I believe that because think about the beginning of September. The beginning of September is when we all said, oh my gosh, the sun angle's really tough. Now, when I leave at 6 o'clock, the sun is almost, you know, across the horizon. So, yeah, unfortunately.
Give it a month, it's going to be
depressing.
Well,
then we flip the clocks, too.
I think the time change is November 2nd. Is that right?
I think you're right.
It might be right.
I think you're right about that.
Let's see. All right. Finally, it's Sue's News. We have today's random fact.
I'm going to have to clarify just to make sure we're not giving out fake news.
Ferris wheels were originally called pleasure wheels when they were invented in the 1600s. went ahead and got rid of that. And that's it.
Well,
Sue's News.
Hey, Sue, they still sell those in some stores, probably even locally, if you want to know the truth. Yeah, November 3rd is when we fall
November
back.
November 3rd, sorry, it was off by a day.
Paul Morrow coming up next on 97.1 FM Talk.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the weekend is almost here. Don't forget a roundtable tomorrow in the 3 o'clock hour. We only have a couple more left before Election Day. Jane will be here tomorrow. State Rep Donna Behringer and GOP. I always want to come up with a different name for Keller, like Fire Thrower. Greg Keller will be here tomorrow. Paul Hall with entertainment, Cusimano with some sports, and we'll get into the 30th anniversary of Pulp Fiction with my friend Dan Buffa in the 5 o'clock hour. Right now, back with us, a regular contributor here and to Fox News, retired NYPD inspector, the founder of a great website called theopsdesk.org, or rather, Paul Morrow is back with us. Paul, how are you this afternoon?
Doing good, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Before we get to some crime stuff and some other things, what did you think about the Bret Baier interview with Kamala last night?
Well, you know, here's what I default to. A couple of things. First, she is the one who's falling in the polls, not Donald Trump. So I think she needed to be more compelling than that, trying to be completely nonpartisan. Just Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump as the rejoinder to every issue.
Yes.
I don't think compels any undecideds. And further, I would say that if you're not going to answer questions, you need to be as charming as Bill Clinton was. If you are not going to be as charming as Bill Clinton, then you need to answer questions. But to be prickly and also not answer questions doesn't really move the ball down range for you. And so I think it was a blown opportunity. I think that, you know, the Fox audience and Fox itself, I'm sure, appreciated her coming in to do the interview. And she just seemed to be coming off of talking points that they seem to have decided internally that she doesn't need to answer a question, just keep hammering Trump. And I'm not sure that was the right way to go.
You know, and I said yesterday she got a little angry elf, as I would say, as we get closer to the holidays later in that interview. And that maybe did surprise me, to your point, because I don't know how it's going to play. But it's interesting because, you know, the people reacting to this, Paul, and some of this stuff, you know, from the New York Times, the Washington Post, claiming that she did so well in that interview. Now, I think that some of the hyperbole on the other side for how awful she did, it wasn't very good, but I don't know if it was anything that gave the Trump campaign a moment for an ad or anything like that. And her side hates Trump so much, they don't really care. They just wanted to see her sort of survive it. So in the end, as we get closer to this election, I'm not sure what the impact is. But to your point, look, they have to be a little worried or they wouldn't be doing stuff like this, because Michigan, Wisconsin, some of these states are getting pretty tight, it looks like.
Exactly. And I think it was really incumbent upon her to come in and maybe break character a little bit. But instead, she, I think, just played to her audience, hammered Trump, hammered Trump, hammered Trump. And again, I think that just consolidated everybody in the positions that they were already in. I don't see it moving the needle. And if the reporting we're getting is true, she's the one who kind of needed to maybe move the needle a little bit. And they seem to have decided they don't need to. And so let's see how prescient that is.
You know, and it's going to be, I'm terrible, Paul. I'm just going to tell you, I'm terrible at gut checks. Okay, you go back to 2016. I didn't think Trump had a chance of an electoral path, right? And mainly,
no,
you know,
me neither.
Interestingly
me neither.
Enough, a lot of that was on Pennsylvania. You know, if you go back to then, a lot of it was still hinged on Pennsylvania. We were talking more about Florida then even, and that seemingly isn't an issue.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I do think the more I hear, you know, from independent voters, I guess there's some that haven't made up their minds. There's just this level of distrust with Harris. Now, people kind of know Trump, right? I even read this thing. It was interesting. In the Wall Street Journal, they sat down with a bunch of people that were independent, undecided voters, et cetera. And everybody knows what Trump's about. They know the nastiness at this point, right? They've sort of swallowed their opposition to that if they don't like Harris, and they're going to vote for him anyway. But there's still a wide swath of people that vote in presidential elections that don't listen to shows like this, that don't watch Fox, that I think have a level of distrust with her. And by the way, I think that includes African-Americans.
I think, you know, if you are a comparatively low information voter, and what I'm not, and that's not to be insulting, people are busy.
Yes.
If you are not reading and listening deeply into the news, the takeaway regarding her is somebody that just is congenitally predisposed not to answer a question and then to break out into an unfortunate cackle whenever pressed. And at inappropriate moments. And so that really, I think, is the impression that a lot of America has. And, you know, it matters because I think as you get closer to the election, you have to be able to perceive in your mind, in your mind's eye, the idea, okay, this person is who I want flying my plane. This is the person who we want in charge in the instance of, God forbid, another 9/11 or a war, a national crisis, something really serious where there's a real character check. And I think more and more, the American electorate just can't form that picture. And as you get closer to pulling the lever, it's very hard for me to picture POTUS Harris. I just don't see it. I don't think she's risen to the occasion. Now, the animus against Trump might be enough. They seem to have decided that that's going to carry the day. But what a blown opportunity, because if she had managed to step up and articulate policy in a compelling way, I think that it was there for her. But she just either won't do it or can't do it.
You know, if you take, look, animus against Trump, that's going to exist. There's going to be people, look, a lot of people that were Republicans or consider themselves Republicans, they probably still can't do it. But I also think it's certainly Roe v. Wade. And I guess my point was going to be, if you take that issue out of the mix right now, I think this polling would be just awful for Kamala Harris. I mean, that's the thing that's keeping it close, because you have so many, you know, independent women voters in particular, but now she's losing male support. Now, I want to say that's misogyny or whatever it is, but there's no doubt it's happening, and I think that's what the campaign is kind of reacting to right now.
I think that's absolutely true. That is the bellwether issue, and, you know, that is not going to be – it's kind of short-sighted if you're on the left, but I guess, look, you know, you got to play for the big win here now. But, you know, at some point, that issue is going to sunset, because you're going to realize that a couple of years from now or whatever, while the world did not end – you know, it'll all sort of settle. It's still a comparatively new ruling that came down from SCOTUS, and it hasn't really sort of been internalized into our system yet. But at some point, it will all go back to the states. The states will manage to process it. And at some point, it'll come out metabolized in our system. And that issue is going to go away. And if we continue to go down the path that the Democrats are leading us down, were they to win, yeah, it's going to be very hard for them to win, let's say, next time around or at the local level, or to capture all three levers of government, because it's just not working. Our blue cities are falling apart. The border remains a crisis. They're not going to engage in the kind of wholesale deportations that I think a lot of the country thinks needs to happen here. The polling shows that. And so, in a way, it's very short-sighted, because that issue is not going to be around forever. But I agree. Right now, that is the wedge issue.
You know, and I'll move on from Harris in a second, but on the border issue in particular, there just seems to be, and this has occurred, I guess, for a long time, there's this fundamental, I'm not even going to say misunderstanding, there's a refusal on the part, you heard it in this Bloomberg guy the other day that interviewed Trump. I heard it from BBC reporters, Paul, that came here to St. Louis. They interviewed my friend Jane Duker and I about some election issues, and they brought up, you know, some of this related to crime and abortion, et cetera. But what's interesting is that you know, I think you have a situation where you don't have the American people, as we indicated here, have a level of trust with Harris on these issues. But also, it's going to come back to the economy. It's hard for me to believe that if this is a change election and we're talking to people about what might be different, and you saw Brett sort of pin her down, you know, you've been there for 3.5 years, what are you going to change? And there's nothing. I think the economy and the economy stupid and are you better off, that's still going to really be the issue that it boils down to.
And I think that's what's actually hurting her among African-Americans and African-American males. I think that, you know, when you see, and look, this is anecdotal, you know, it's just stuff I'm getting off of X and other social media sites, et cetera, and things people send me, and interviews that I've seen on TV. But even, you know, people I know from around town here, it is all about that when it comes to, in many cases, at least in my experience, African-American males who are saying, I don't understand why I should vote for you. You're not articulating why it's going to be any better than it had been. And my economic opportunities were better under Donald Trump. And, you know, I go back to the old line, I forget who said it, but the best social justice move or the best social program is a job. I believe it preceded Reagan. I remember who that was. But, you know, she is defaulting, of course, to giveaways, right? I'm going to give away money, and I am going to lower the criminalization of marijuana. And, you know, if you're sitting where a lot of people are, you got to say to yourself, well, how insulting. You're just going to buy me off with that? That's not what I want. I want a future. I don't want a bribe.
Yeah, and look,
and that's how that reads.
Sage Steele was on Fox yesterday talking about this. It is insulting. I mean, these are the issues that people care about. And what I was going to do, I didn't close the loop on this properly. I was going to talk about the border, because this is another one of those issues. You see African-Americans, I played the audio all throughout the summer, whether it's in New York, Boston, Chicago, you know, Colorado, they
can't fathom. They don't get, I don't get it, you don't get it, how so many resources from the federal government, state government, local government can go to people who are not legally in this country, and then they, as taxpaying citizens, don't get what, you know, they should have coming to them. And there's this still this fundamental, and again, this is why I was saying earlier, I kind of lost my train of thought, Paul. It's a misunderstanding, but it's also a refusal to acknowledge the difference between legal and illegal immigration. How are we this far deep into this election, and there's still people on the left that can't disseminate between those two things?
You know, I go back to something that was once said about Barack Obama. I think I read it in Wall Street Journal at a National Review, and it was a characterization of him as follows. Barack Obama is the first man to occupy the presidency where you get the feeling that he believes the job is too small for him. And I think that there is something in the progressive DNA. You know, I wouldn't say the old school Democrats, mainstream Democrats, whatever you want to say, but the modern version of the Democratic Party really seems to believe that to think, and that's why America First chafes against them so much, because no, we're supposed to be acting globally. This jingoistic consideration of America as our primary function here, the safety and prosperity of Americans, that is just way too parochial. And we have to be thinking in terms of a brave new world where everything is synchronized, and I guess that leads to some sort of one world government under the UN or whatever. But you always run into, if you really play these things out, you always run into that. And that's why they always blame America First. That's why the climate change issue is so important to them, despite the fact that compared to China and India and other nations, we are a comparative minor player in that and are the only ones who are really making steps to move forward on those issues. It really comes down to that, that they just really don't seem to think that America First. It doesn't matter who's delivering that message, whether it's Donald Trump or Ronald Reagan or one of the Bushes. It just is not something they seem to believe in.
I don't get it. I really don't.
And that's why that they're more than happy to give all kinds of money to non-citizens as opposed to our own people, including veterans, by the way.
Paul Morrow said, look, we've spent all this time. We've talked about politics. It's been a great conversation, but I didn't really touch yet what we were going to talk about. And let's at least for a few minutes here talk about crime numbers, because very quietly here, the FBI has revised some of these figures. This is hardly, you know, getting any coverage because you had Kamala doing this interview. You have action, obviously, in the Middle East. But this seems to be a significant story here.
Absolutely. And there have been characters like me who have been saying over the last few months, do not trust these numbers. The numbers are not accurate. And by the way, the numbers they revised are 2022. They will revise 2023 at some point as well, but they'll do it post 5 November.
Yes, that's interesting, too.
Yeah, the numbers are BS. They've been BS all along. And what they hide up, I have an email. I have exchanges between me and the FBI press office where I say, how is it possible that for the last 10, 15 years, the FBI homicide numbers and the NYPD homicide numbers for New York City track almost precisely? And then 2 years ago, they diverged by 30-40%, with, of course, the FBI numbers being lower. How is this possible? And I get back a masterclass in obfuscation. Oh, you know, classification, we reclassify, differences in the way we define homicide. And none of that is really accurate, in my estimation here. It's just part of this. You know, remember something, too. The New York numbers are not even fed into, along with many other blue cities, fed into the NYPD statistics. So when Donald Trump says, folks, don't trust the FBI statistics, look at the Bureau of Justice statistics. Bureau of Justice, which is also a federal agency, they do an enormous crime survey every year. That's all they do is crime numbers. That's their job. Who knew that we had a bureau that does that? Very few people do. And they do a 200,000-person survey, which is well above what you need to get accurate numbers. And they simply ask, if you've been a victim of a crime, what kind of crime was it? Those numbers generally tracked to crime numbers that are put out by DOJ, again, until relatively recently. And those numbers show increases. And this increase that was just revised by the Bureau, lo and behold, tracks to those numbers, the Bureau of Justice Statistics numbers. Donald Trump has been trying to make this point in his stump speeches. Unfortunately, statistics bore, numbers bore people. You can manipulate, right, lies, damn lies, and statistics, et cetera. But this stuff does matter on the ground. And it really does show you that this has been a myth that crime is going down. And You know, it's funny. I said it on the air. I said, look, just use your eyes. Go outside. Look at the state of your city. And I was widely mocked on the left. I was apparently featured in some video that Jon Stewart did.
Uh-oh.
And it took a clip of me saying that. And, you know, I feel quite vindicated because I live in New York City, and I've seen the change quite palpably.
Well, we
and
have
I think
here.
This just validates.
We have here too. You know, there's a parallel. There's no doubt that this is happening, and unfortunately, my city has been sort of victim of that too. Paul, great conversation. We spent a little time on politics, maybe too much because I wanted to dig into the crime numbers, but always a great conversation. Look, we're 2.5 weeks out from the big day, right? It's getting close.
We are. How can you talk about anything else if you're in the business we're in, right?
Absolutely. Have a great week.
You too, buddy. Take care now.
You know, you heard, Sue, the reference there to the minimum wage. That was David Stokes from the Show Me Institute on with Mark Cox. And I might have mentioned this yesterday. They're voting on a bunch of different things in California. Prop 36 is the one that's going to crack down on crime. And the thing about Prop 36 that's hilarious, it is 70 percentage points plus approval. It's going to pass overwhelmingly. And the LA Times and the governor of California are against it, right? Same thing with George Gascon, who is the Kim Gardner of the West. The polling is unbelievable. People in L.A. want to boot him out of office, but the L.A. Times has stuck by him saying that he, you know, because he's a reformer, of course.
Uh-huh.
But Proposition 32, think about this, would increase. Now, California is different than Missouri, all right? It's all, maybe some of this is relative with cost of living. $18 minimum wage is on
well,
the ballot.
That's ridiculous.
Well, I don't think that's going to pass. I do. You know, they've had some luck with passing this, and the last time we voted for minimum wage in Missouri, I voted for it.
Right.
Okay? But $18, what in the hell is going to happen to businesses? I think we know. So the good news is maybe for businesses in California, I don't think it's going to pass. At least the polling right now does not show that that is going to land in favor of the proponents.
Jeez.
All right, so Dave Strom from Hot Air is coming up here after 5 o'clock. There's several things that I want to talk to you about him. We'll get into what happened last night with Brett Baer, but he's written about a couple of things that were really fascinating, including, and I referenced this last week, and I don't think I circled back. So there was a story, so you might remember me talking about this. There was a story in the New York Times where they took 58 physicians that had allegedly been to Gaza, right? And they interviewed them all, and there was a consistency in some of the storytelling that they were sharing from the front lines of the Palestinians and the refugees, et cetera. And one of the things that they noticed was, they claimed, is that there were children, young children, 8, 10, 12, young kids with bullet wounds to the head, like a lot of them, right? But here's the weird thing. The images that got out from that in that particular story have been questioned because they don't look real. So the question now is, and the New York Times has kind of glossed over this, it hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but when Dave wrote about it, and I'm not so sure this isn't the case, it's almost like the New York Times put something in that is a hoax. I'm not saying that there's evidence of that right now, but there's no exit wounds on some of the bullets. It looks like some of the bodies were laid over a bullet, so then to get that, you know, image from an X-ray, and it's very interesting. And then the other thing that he wrote about, which I've kind of, you know, hammered on this week, is this whole nonsense from the Trump rally the other night that it was a disaster when he was dancing around playing the music on stage. It was awkward because some people had medical emergencies in the crowd, so that's why he was doing it, but the crowd loved it. They were eating it up. It wasn't something that was this disaster the way it was portrayed in some of the legacy media out there, including MSNBC. So we'll get with him on that and some of the other things related to Brett Baer. Also in the next hour, I'm a big fan and a proponent of nuclear power. Apparently, so is Microsoft and other big tech companies, because they are jumping on the nuclear energy bandwagon. And Robert Bryce has written about this for Real Clear. He's going to join us coming up at 5:30, plus an audio cut of the day and more. Don't forget a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow.
Get more at 971talk.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.